There's a famous phrase in medicine, first, do no harm. It's widely seen as the centerpiece of the Hippocratic Oath, having found ubiquity with physicians, patients, and pop culture. For example, here's Benedict Cumberbatch citing it as superhero Doctor Strange.
It is Doctor Strange, not Master Strange, not Mr. Strange, Doctor Strange. When I became a doctor, I swore an oath to do no harm, and I have just killed a man. I'm not doing that again.
The common understanding, then, is that it's the first duty of physicians to avoid doing harm or injury to their patients. What's less known is that this famous phrase does not stand on an island. And indeed, it's not solely one phrase. A first phrase from the oath roughly translates to English as, I will do no harm or injustice to my patients. And a second phrase from the oath translates to English as, I will abstain from all intentional wrongdoing and harm. And, as with attorneys and their clients, a doctor's duties to avoid doing harm, injustice, and wrongdoing don't end when the doctor is done with the patient. Instead, the Hippocratic School gave great importance to a clinical doctrine dictating that physicians recorded their findings and medicinal methods in a very clear and objective manner, so these records may be passed down and employed by other physicians. So, did the medical examiner who performed the autopsy on Adriana Hutto in the Amanda Lewis case follow the teaching of Hippocrates? Or did he engage in wrongdoing that caused harm, injustice, and an inability for future physicians to make sense of the work he had or had not done?
Hi, and welcome to Undisclosed, Toward Justice, The State versus Amanda Lewis. My name is Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. This is the sixth episode in our deep dive series into the Amanda Lewis case. In 2008, Amanda Lewis was convicted of the 2007 drowning death of her 7-year-old daughter, Adriana Hutto, and given a life sentence without the possibility of parole. She's been in prison ever since.
Let's start by again taking you back to the day of the drowning. On August 8, 2007, Amanda Lewis pulled her 7-year-old daughter, Adriana, from the family's pool and called 911 at about 2:36 p.m. First responders arrived mere minutes later and solely noted the single, small, circular bruise near the center of Adriana's forehead at the hairline. About 20 to 30 minutes later, flight paramedic Sharon Thomas and nurse Dwayne Wybrew treated Adriana while she was medevaced via helicopter to Bay Medical in Panama City, Florida. And at the start of this flight, they were the first two to notice the bruising on Adriana's right shoulder, as well as the dense linear bruises on her forehead. Again, here was how Sharon Thomas testified to the linear bruises at trial.
And then I have this one other photograph, photograph 4E. Same questions as to that photograph and the injuries in that photograph.
Now, these.
Those are the ones that you saw.
As we've noted before, 2 days after Adriana drowned, the autopsy was performed. Specifically, on the morning of August 10, 2007, the autopsy was done at the 14th Judicial Circuit Medical Examiner's Office in Panama City. The autopsy was performed by medical examiner Dr. Charles Siebert, Jr., along with his director of investigations, Lisa Ruckman. As you'll recall, it was Ruckman who came up with the theory that the linear bruises on Adriana's forehead and a bruise on her left cheek were caused by Amanda dunking Adriana's face with her left hand.
Now, Ms. Ruckman, these bruises, what would you call these injuries, ma'am?
Through my experience, initially, we didn't have any information. I personally didn't have any information. And from my experience, it did look consistent to be that of a left hand.
Okay. Did you do anything during this process where these photographs were being made? to either confirm or deny that, ma'am?
I did. To test my original hypothesis that it was a handprint, I placed my hand over the bruises, and as you can see on the side of the cheek here, it lined up perfectly with this side of my left thumb. This would be the index finger where it lined up, my middle finger, ring finger, and then either one of these two smaller bruises matched where my pinky would be, and the ball of my hand was consistent with that. The mark that was on the bridge of the nose, it did seem to fit.
This was the theory the prosecution would present at trial, and it was Lisa Ruckman, not Dr. Siebert, who testified to it. Of course, this teed up two lines of cross-examination we cited in a prior episode. Again, the first was whether Ruckman was even qualified to testify to this theory.
Ms. Ruckman, are you a medical doctor?
No, sir.
You have any medical training whatsoever?
No, formally, no, sir.
Ever been to an EMT school where they teach you how to be an emergency medical technician?
No, sir.
Do you have a college degree?
No, sir.
And the second was whether there was any scientific basis for the belief that Amanda caused the bruises by dunking Adriana in the pool with her left hand.
Have you done any studies about how human hands cause injuries to faces?
No.
Have you read any medical literature about it?
No.
Do you know how much pressure is required to cause a bruise on a face by a human hand?
Not by a human hand, no, sir.
Well, demonstrate on your face exactly how you think those injuries occurred.
Well, it differs because certainly my face is a different size than hers.
Well, just put your hand on your face. I want you to press your face hard enough so you can make those bruises up there.
I don't think that I could do that to myself.
I don't think you could either. Thank you.
But then there was a third line of cross-examination, tying together the questions of how someone with a complete lack of credentials could be the basis for the state's theory of the case and why Dr. Siebert himself wasn't testifying at trial.
But you didn't work for Dr. Siebert, did you?
I did.
And he's gone, right? He's no longer a medical examiner. Is that correct?
No longer in the state of Florida, no, sir.
Okay. And he's gone because the Medical Examiner's Commission found that he did sloppy autopsies. Isn't that right?
I wouldn't agree to that.
And the governor said that he lost confidence in his ability to do autopsies in our circuit. Isn't that correct?
I'm not certain if he was quoted as saying that or not.
Well, wouldn't you admit that allowing an untrained person, somebody without a degree, somebody without medical training, to come to court and testify about how injuries were made is kind of sloppy?
Objection.
You agree with that? Where's Dr. Siebert?
And so, as defense counsel Walter Smith asked, where was Dr. Siebert?
To answer that question, we need to rewind from Lisa Ruckman's testimony in February 2008, about 2 years, back to January 2006. In January 2006, Martin Lee Anderson, a 14-year-old African-American school kid, was sent to a juvenile boot camp in Bay County, Florida, based upon joyriding in his grandmother's car. That boot camp was run by Bay County Sheriff Frank McKeithen. Here's WMBB reporting on what happened on Anderson's first day of boot camp on January 6, 2006.
In 2006, Anderson began his sentence at the Bay County Sheriff's Juvenile Boot Camp. During his first mandatory mile run, he complained of fatigue, but drill instructors pressed him to continue. Anderson collapsed after running several laps and later died at the hospital.
This case captured national attention, and not just because Martin Lee Anderson was forced to run despite his distress. Instead, it's what happened after he collapsed that captivated concerned people across the country. Here was reporting by the Associated Press.
This video was shot shortly before Anderson died in January of 2006. Guards and a nurse surround the teen, several of them hitting and kicking him.
While the boot camp was in Bay County, Martin Lee Anderson was taken for treatment to a hospital in Escambia County, where he was declared dead. Now, Florida law requires that an autopsy be performed by the medical examiner in the district where the death occurred. But the Bay County Sheriff's Office wanted the case to be handled in Bay County. The reason given was convenience. But a possible ulterior motive was Bay County State's Attorney Steve Meadows being close personal friends with Bay County Sheriff Frank McKeithen, who again ran the boot camp where Anderson was beaten. And so, the autopsy was done by Bay County Medical Examiner Charles Siebert, who would later do the autopsy of Adriana Hutto. So, what did he find? Here's reporting by WMNF.
After the autopsy, which was performed by a controversial medical examiner with an expired license, it was ruled that Anderson's death was not due to the beating, but due to a sickle cell trait.
So, two things. First, as was noted in this clip, yes, Dr. Siebert was performing autopsies with an expired medical license. And second, as noted in this clip, Dr. Siebert concluded that Martin Lee Anderson died from natural complications of sickle cell trait, a genetic blood disorder. According to reporting by the Gainesville Sun, it was a natural death, Siebert said. The trait caused red blood cells to sickle and change shape, causing a whole cascade of events that led to bleeding and hemorrhaging. Moreover, Dr. Siebert ruled out trauma or an injury as the cause of death, which would absolve the boot camp and Sheriff McKeithen of any liability. While Dr. Siebert's conclusions were released to the public, the tape of Martin Lee Anderson being beaten initially was not. An Associated Press article from January 18, 2006, cited Bay County State's Attorney Steve Meadows as saying that, quote, it would be incredibly inappropriate to release the tape before the state attorney has had a chance to review it and decide if it is evidence. The article then noted that, quote, Bay County Sheriff Frank McKeithen indicated the tape could cause public criticism of his department, but didn't say why. When it is released and made public, there will be many questions, concerns, and accusations.
Almost a month later, on February 17, 2006, the footage was finally made public, producing immediate outrage at the local level.
It's murder in the first degree. The boot camp guys are guilty. It's murder in the first degree.
Several versions of the footage are up on YouTube if you want to watch it, but an article the next day in the Palm Beach Post provided a pretty good description. Quote, although Bay County Sheriff's officials have said he was restrained because Martin Lee Anderson was uncooperative, there is no moment on the tape where he clearly appears uncooperative. Rather, the tape zooms to him already surrounded by guards, who are clearly seen thrusting their knees into his back and legs several times and punching him repeatedly in the arm. The guards spend about 5 minutes trying to get Anderson to walk back toward the rest of the group, but the boy seems incapable of holding his own weight after the interaction with the guards. The article also cited an expert critiquing Dr. Siebert's conclusion. According to the article, quote, I've been working with sickle cells for over 30 years, and I have never seen a natural death due to sickle cell trait, said Dr. Alan Noonan, dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy in Maryland and a member of the board of directors of the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America. Noonan said some research has shown that sickle cell trait, which is when someone carries a sickle cell gene but does not have the disease, may lead to death in cases where people are flying at high altitudes and the plane's cabin becomes depressurized. But he was not aware of any case of someone dying from sickle cell trait on ground level. It just doesn't happen, Noonan said. The video of Martin Lee Anderson being beaten soon went nationwide and was the first big case handled by Benjamin Crump, the attorney who would go on to represent the families of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor.
And with that nationwide attention came scrutiny of Dr. Siebert's work in prior cases. Here's more reporting by WMNF.
The original medical examiner who ruled Anderson's death was due to sickle cell trait, which affects 1 in 10 African Americans, had an expired license and several years ago had incorrectly identified the sex of a corpse.
Specifically, 3 days after the video of the beating was made public, the Associated Press published an article about the deaths of Donna Faye Reed and her father James Terry in a tornado that was spawned by Hurricane Ivan. According to the article, Dr. Siebert's autopsy report for Donna stated that her prostate gland and testicles were, quote, unremarkable. Now, this was pretty problematic, given that Donna was a woman and these are both male organs. Meanwhile, Dr. Siebert's autopsy report for Terry stated that he had no scars on his back or abdomen. In reality, though, Terry had scars in both spots, as well as an 8-inch scar between his shoulder blades. The mess surrounding all of this led to five things. First, the Bay County boot camp was shut down. Second, upon his request, Bay County State's Attorney Steve Meadows was taken off the case when it seemed clear that his medical examiner had written an autopsy report designed to cover for Meadows' friend, Bay County Sheriff Frank McKeithen, who again had run the boot camp. Third, the State Medical Examiner's Commission opened an investigation into other cases that Dr. Siebert had worked. Fourth, questions concerning Dr. Siebert's credibility came not just from the Medical Examiner's Commission and millions of everyday citizens who had seen the tape of the beating, but also Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who plainly said, quote, if he wasn't beat up, that undetected illness wouldn't have caused his death. And finally, fifth, Governor Bush ordered that Martin Lee Anderson's body be exhumed so that a second autopsy could be performed. Here's audio from an episode of True Crime with Aphrodite Jones.
The body of a Florida teen who collapsed at boot camp has been exhumed for a second examination into the cause of his death. This is 2 months after he died. And he did have that first autopsy, but the results of that were so controversial that the state actually asked that a new autopsy be completed.
As you might expect, that second autopsy produced a completely different conclusion. Actually, two of them. Not trusting another state medical examiner, Martin Lee Anderson's family retained a seasoned physician to observe the proceedings. Here's more reporting from WMNF.
Last Friday, in the wake of public outrage after the surveillance tape of the beating was made public, Anderson's body was dug up out of its grave and moved from Panama City to Tampa for a new exam by the Hillsborough County coroner. Anderson's family and lawyers have brought in Dr. Michael Bowden, who in the past has examined the body of John F. Kennedy, Emmett Till, and Medgar Evers, to observe the autopsy.
A March 18, 2006 article in the South Florida Sun-Sentinel reported on what Dr. Bowden observed during the second autopsy of Martin Lee Anderson. And what he saw will sound so similar to so many cases we've seen in recent years. According to the article, there was somebody pressing on Martin Lee Anderson's back while he was on the ground. That prevents the diaphragm from moving, and that can cause asphyxia, the lack of breathing, Bowden told the panel from New York by telephone. He can't breathe, he can't get oxygen. When he leaves in that stretcher, he's already mostly brain dead, he said. About a month later, with the doctor who did the second autopsy still not releasing his results, hundreds of protesters marched in the state capitol, leading to 30 students doing a two-day sit-in at the office of Governor Jeb Bush. Here's more reporting by WMNF.
In Tallahassee, 30 students began a sit-in at Florida Governor Jeb Bush's office this morning. From WMNF in Tampa, Andrew Stelzer reports.
The students occupying the governor's office are upset that no one has been held responsible for the death of a 14-year-old African-American who was beaten by guards at a juvenile boot camp in the Florida Panhandle.
Here we have a videotape clearly showing the guard beating this young boy to death, and nothing has been done. You know, it's over 100 days already, and the time for diplomacy has run out.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, we're going to take a quick ad break, and I just want to explain something to you about why it's so important for you guys to support our sponsors. You might not know this, but all these years, all the work we have done for all of the defendants whose cases we reinvestigate and cover has been pro bono. We don't charge them or their families or their lawyers a dime. And the only way we can afford to do this, which this is work that would ordinarily cost a defendant hundreds of thousands of dollars, the only way we can afford to do this is because of our sponsors. So we are so grateful to our sponsors, and we are grateful to all of you. If you want to know what you can do to help support our work, support our sponsors. Thank you so much. All right, folks, fall is officially here. And with fall comes what I love the most, layers. Cozy, soft, comfortable, but beautiful, chic, effortless looking layers. And for that look, for that classic, beautiful fall look where I also feel like I'm just surrounded by comfort and softness, I go to Quince. Quince is my go-to for quality essentials that are cozy, that are refined, and will not blow your budget. You want cashmere? You can afford cashmere. You can afford alpaca with Quince. Think $50 Mongolian cashmere, premium denim that fits like a dream, and luxe outerwear that you are going to wear year after year because these are classics. These are the pieces that are going to turn into your fall uniform. And Quince partners directly with top-tier ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, and that's why they're able to deliver luxury quality pieces at half the prices of similar brands. Quince is the essential wardrobe upgrade that feels smart, stylish, and is effortless. The Mongolian button-down cashmere sweater is a staple. I've got them in three different colors. And this fall, I'm kind of eyeing the trench coat. It is absolutely beautiful. It's a stretch crepe trench coat, $100, beautiful classic colors, so classy. I think it'll totally complete the podcast detective look for me. So this is the time to treat yourself the way I'm going to treat myself with that trench coat. Find your fall staples at Quince. Go to quince.com/towardjustice for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/towardjustice. Not towards justice, but toward justice to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/towardjustice.
Hey, Central Ohio. The Nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the Nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Update your home and save big money with Mastercraft Doors at Menards. For over 50 years, Mastercraft has been making quality doors inside and out. Choose from the best in-stock selection of interior and exterior doors ready to take home today. Or design your door your way with our free designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft Doors and check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
He said, I'm going to tell you what you're going to do right now. You're going to hand me that gun, and I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to murder your dad, and you're going to watch.
What causes ordinary people to do unthinkable things?
They found video of him killing women.
He buried these 11 women and kept going out there. He made a road going out there.
Story stranger and darker than fiction.
Trying to escape from some guy who had me chained up in his basement.
Survivors who refused to break.
I was studying his face because I was thinking, if I get out of this, I'm going to get you someday.
From serial killers to catfishers, the Minds of Madness podcast covers unthinkable crimes and the unbreakable people who survived them. Listen to new episodes every week wherever you get your podcasts.
911. There's been the murder.
Hi, everybody. Rabia here. I am so excited to tell you, if you haven't heard yet, that Undisclosed finally has a Patreon. Our Patreon is where you will find all kinds of perks like ad-free episodes, a bonus episode every month where Colin and I answer all your questions. And also, you're going to find perks like early access to our limited merch drops, which are going to start happening twice a year, as well as the ability to get on a Zoom call with me once a month, face-to-face, to live discuss any true crime case that you guys are obsessed with and really want to go through. And I love having a place to talk about that stuff because I need people to talk about it with. But if you're not in it for the perks and you're in it for the justice and you just want to support our work, I would really ask you to please sign up for the dollar a month tier. And the perk there is just good karma and warm fuzzies and being in the fight for justice for these defendants, because if everybody chips in a dollar a month, our work can be funded for another decade to come. So check out the Undisclosed Patreon by going to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Again, it's patreon.com/undisclosedpod. And I hope to see you all there. Thank you for supporting our work for a decade. And please stay with us so we can do this for years to come. Medical examiner Vernard Adams, who performed the second autopsy in March, finally issued his report in May 2006. According to Adams, quote, Martin Anderson's death was caused by suffocation due to the actions of the guards at the boot camp. The suffocation was caused by manual occlusion of the mouth in concert with forced inhalation of ammonia fumes that caused spasm of the vocal cords, resulting in internal blockage of the upper airway. Now, these results made it crystal clear that Dr. Siebert was carrying water for law enforcement and that his conclusion that Anderson's death was caused by sickle cell trait was towing the company line and not a legitimate medical conclusion. Again, here's reporting from WMNF.
Seville Brown is president of the Florida State Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
The examiner is basically working with the sheriff and the law enforcement authorities of that area. And as the tone is set from law enforcement and the sheriff department, there goes the medical exam.
This belief was buttressed by delving deeper into Dr. Charles Siebert's history. An article in the May 26, 2006 edition of the Ocala Star-Banner reported on a 1997 case in which a man named Michael Nyson died after being beaten up by police officers. But according to Dr. Siebert, Nyson's death was the result of earlier injuries in a car accident and not the beating. Nyson's family claimed this was a clear cover-up to protect the police. And while you could claim the family itself was biased, it's harder to levy that charge against the State Medical Examiner's Commission. As we noted earlier, the commission started reviewing Dr. Siebert's prior work after his autopsy on Anderson. And in August 2006, the commission issued its findings. The commission found that Dr. Siebert was negligent and failed to, quote, perform the duties required of a medical examiner in at least 35 of the cases they reviewed. Now, there are two notes on this. First, the commission did not review the Martin Lee Anderson case. And second, the commission was actually limited in what they were able to review. In other words, if Dr. Siebert made an error regarding the internal organs of a cadaver, there would be no way for the commission to know he made a mistake. That's why the commission said there was negligence in at least 35 cases. In reality, that number is likely quite a bit higher. As a result of these findings, the commission placed Dr. Siebert on supervised probation for the remainder of his contract. Because the commission did not trust Dr. Siebert to do competent autopsies on his own, they ordered that his work, including his work in homicide cases, would be reviewed by Dr. Barbara Wolf.
Later, in April 2007, the Florida legislature issued a special master's final report that was signed off on by Ken Pruitt and Marco Rubio, then the Speaker of the Florida House. The report first addressed the claims by officers at the boot camp that they attacked Martin Lee Anderson because he was physically resisting them. According to the report, quote, "The video, however, does not show Martin offering any physical resistance. At the time of the hammer fist blows, he was lying on his stomach with an officer on each arm pinned to the ground. It is unclear to the special masters how Martin presented a threat from balling his fist in these circumstances. In fact, from the time Martin collapsed or dropped to the ground, he appears flaccid and unresisting. Nonetheless, the officers struck him and applied the pressure point behind the ears numerous times, claiming that he tensed, tried to pull it away, or otherwise resisted them. We find there is competent and substantial evidence that Martin did not resist, if he did so at all, sufficiently to justify the blows and pressure points he suffered. And, in terms of cause of death, after reviewing Dr. Siebert's claims, as well as work by many other medical experts, the report concluded as follows. Given these medical opinions in the video, we find there is competent and substantial evidence to conclude that Martin's death occurred from the following sequence of events. Martin began suffering some distress during the run, probably as a result of sickling of his cells or rhabdomyolysis due to mild exercise-induced oxygen deprivation. Had he been left alone, however, he would have recovered. The inappropriate administration of ammonia lasted at least continuously for 3 minutes and possibly 4 minutes during a time when his mouth was clamped shut and the capsule held directly under his nose so that he had no option but to breathe the ammonia-laden air. This deprived him of oxygen for at least 3 minutes, causing his cells to sickle, if they had not already begun to do so, leading to an irreversible cascade of events that involved massive bleeding, organ failure, and ultimately brain death. We further find there is competent and substantial evidence that but for the prolonged administration of ammonia, Martin would not have died. Therefore, in conclusion, we find that Martin died primarily as a result of suffocation arising from forced administration of ammonia. Martin Lee Anderson's family would ultimately be awarded $7.4 million in damages. About a month after the special master's final report, on May 24, 2007, the State Medical Examiner's Commission voted not to recommend Dr. Siebert for reappointment to his position as Bay County Medical Examiner. Then, less than a month later, on June 13, 2007, the commission voted to remove Dr. Siebert from the office immediately, saying it had concerns about his honesty. According to a St. Petersburg Times article, the commission found that Dr. Siebert was either negligent or failed to perform his duties, then made, quote, material misrepresentation of data upon which an opinion or a conclusion as a medical examiner is based. This was based in part on the commission's review of the Martin Lee Anderson case. According to a Tampa Bay Times article on the commission's report, quote, in his autopsy report, Siebert depicted the visual appearance of several glands or organs. The review panel found it unlikely that Siebert could see those glands and organs because the body parts around them were left largely intact. The panel's report notes that the second autopsy revealed hemorrhaging in Anderson's thighs and right forearm, not revealed by Siebert's examination because he failed to sufficiently examine areas beneath the teenager's skin and around his groin. As noted, the vote to remove Dr. Siebert was in June 2007. You might recall that Adriana Hutto drowned in August 2007. And so, you might wonder, how did Dr. Siebert perform her autopsy? Well, on July 1st, Bay County State's Attorney Steve Meadows reappointed Dr. Siebert as Bay County Medical Examiner on an interim basis.
And so this is where the Martin Lee Anderson and Adriana Hutto cases come together. Dr. Siebert was not supposed to perform the autopsy on Martin Lee Anderson, but he did, with many believing that his report that absolved the boot camp of culpability was a favor to his state's attorney, Steve Meadows, who was good friends with the sheriff who ran the boot camp. And then, with Dr. Siebert fired in large part due to this autopsy, Steve Meadows threw him a life jacket by reappointing him to his position about a month before his autopsy on Adriana. In other words, when Dr. Siebert performed his autopsy on Adriana on August 10th, you better believe that he would confirm the state's theory that this was homicide and not an accidental drowning. But Dr. Siebert saw something else surprising during Adriana's autopsy, and it is sadly so similar to the errors with the glands and organs he made with Donna Faye Reed and Martin Lee Anderson. Here is the pertinent portion of the investigative report by Sergeant Michael Raley, who was present for the autopsy. Quote, Dr. Siebert advised that upon his initial inspection of Adriana, he had discovered signs of a possible sexual assault. Some bruising was found around the vagina, and an abrasion and some blood was found in the vagina. He advised they had already taken the vaginal swabs and would perform a sexual assault kit. He also advised that a small amount of blood had also been observed in the crotch of the shorts. I asked him if the injury could be attributed to a catheter, and he advised that he did not believe so. He stated the catheter was not a priority in the ER. As you might imagine, this led law enforcement to believe that Adriana had been sexually assaulted. And so, as noted in the report, there was a sexual assault evidence kit, and the state went deep down this rabbit hole based on the belief that there was much more to this case than the drowning. Ultimately, all this testing came up empty. There was no other physical evidence that Adriana had been sexually assaulted. So many resources in this case were wasted because Dr. Siebert simply assumed that the medical staff did not try to insert a catheter in Adriana. But in truth, they did. 3 to 4 times, but they were unsuccessful. Here was testimony at trial by registered nurse Tammy Grice.
What did you do that afternoon, ma'am, as far as having direct contact with the same girl?
I tried to insert a Foley catheter and was unsuccessful.
How many, can you give us an idea of how many attempts you may have made then?
Probably 3 or 4.
And that would have been inserting that in what area?
The urethra.
This was something that any diligent doctor would have known. And indeed, when the state called Dr. Andrea Minyard as a surrogate medical examiner at the Amanda Lewis trial, she explained that what Dr. Siebert thought was a red flag was likely nothing at all.
There's also a small scrape on the opening of her vagina. Now, this would be a big red flag were it not for the possibility that this scrape may have been caused by insertion of a catheter. A catheter is something that a tube that they'll put into the urinary bladder to decompress the bladder in cases of trauma. And apparently there was an attempt or several attempts made at inserting the catheter. So I'm not even going to suggest that that was an inflicted injury, a maliciously inflicted injury. So I just am going to not show a picture of it.
Dr. Siebert's failure to consider critical evidence before jumping to conclusions could also be seen in the Martin Lee Anderson case. About 2 months after his autopsy on Adriana, he was called to testify at the criminal trial for the officers at the boot camp who had beaten Anderson. And despite the special master's conclusion that the officers caused Anderson's death, Dr. Siebert doubled down on his claim that Anderson died from sickle cell trait. This led to a battle of the experts, with Dr. Siebert testifying for the defense and Dr. Vernard Adams, who did the second autopsy, testifying for the state. And so if you want a good example of a medical examiner who considers all the evidence versus one who has tunnel vision, here's a supercut of back-and-forth testimony by Dr. Siebert and Dr. Anderson from the documentary Beating Justice. For reference, Dr. Siebert is the one with the New York accent.
In your opinion, did Martin Lee Anderson suffocate or partially suffocate out there on the field at boot camp?
No, he did not.
If they had not suffocated him or used the ammonia capsules, the physical exertion from the restraint itself in combination with sickling would still have killed him.
So we have a video that depicts all of the circumstances surrounding his death, right?
Yes, we do.
I asked to have the video analyzed frame by frame with a description of exactly what was going on, because when that old video, the raw footage is viewed, there's a lot of activity and it's there are a lot of things going on at once and it was hard to keep track of.
But you didn't watch the video, you didn't see it before you conducted your autopsy, right?
No, I didn't.
Did you personally review that video as well?
Yes, I did.
Approximately how many times?
Oh, many times, and several times with my associate medical examiners, with whom I consulted heavily throughout the investigation.
In fact, you had no idea at that point that the drill instructors had performed hammer strikes and knee strikes on his body when you conducted your autopsy?
No, I did not.
In the original video, there were a few segments where you could see a hand over the mouth or a hand at the nose, but in the enhanced video, it became astoundingly clear that these episodes were actually rather lengthy.
You had no idea, you had heard about ammonia, but you had no idea before you conducted your autopsy that these drill instructors were putting their hands over his mouth during the application of ammonia.
No, I didn't.
There were actually three of them, with the mouth being closed by hand and the ammonia capsule being cupped very close to the nose.
And you didn't know how long, what the length of time that they had applied this ammonia to him was, did you?
Before the autopsy, no.
The first lasted almost a minute, about 50 seconds. The second lasted about the same amount of time, with an interval between. And the third was a composite, a total of 5 minutes.
Was there any sequence in the video that you wanted to pay special attention to?
Yes, obviously there's the sequence at the end where eventually Martin becomes so unconscious or so much in a coma that he's unresponsive and they eventually call the paramedics. That's the area I wanted to concentrate on the most, as to what immediately happened prior to his becoming totally unresponsive.
Yes, the actions of the guard, especially at the end of the tape, caused his death.
Must be so specific. What you're saying is that the guard at the end of the tape smothered this man to death.
Yes.
Did you see any evidence in that sequence of the video where you felt that there was evidence of suffocation going on?
No, I did not.
Was this a natural death?
No.
Can you explain why not?
Again, a natural death has to be one caused exclusively by disease. And since we have an external agency here, suffocation, that is not a disease. It is a trauma.
Dr. Siebert, did knee strikes contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
Not at all.
Did armbar takedowns contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No, they didn't.
Did forearm strikes contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No.
Did yelling in a loud voice contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No.
Did ammonia capsules contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No.
Did pressure points contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No.
Did holding a hand over the mouth, forcing him to inhale ammonia fumes in his nose, contribute to the death of Martin Lee Anderson?
No.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Update your home and save big money with Mastercraft Doors at Menards. For over 50 years, Mastercraft has been making quality doors inside and out. Choose from the best in-stock selection of interior and exterior doors ready to take home today. Or design your door your way with our free designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft Doors and check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on your bathroom update at Menards. Transform your bathroom with a stunning new vanity from Magic Woods. With over 100 options to choose from, our vanities combine contemporary style with durable materials. Find the ideal piece to create the bathroom you've always wanted. From stylish and elegant to simple and modern. Save big money on Magic Woods vanities at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all our great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
In the end, despite the family of Martin Lee Anderson civilly being awarded $7.4 million, the jury in the criminal case found reasonable doubt and declared the officers not guilty. Understandably, this produced public protests once more. In the end, even if Dr. Adams was more credible than Dr. Siebert, they still performed two separate autopsies, and there was no one to supervise Dr. Siebert's first autopsy and declare it deficient.
But there was someone who was supposed to supervise Dr. Siebert's work when he did his autopsy in Adriana. You might recall that the State Medical Examiner's Commission ordered that Dr. Barbara Wolf would review all of Dr. Siebert's work after he was found negligent in at least 35 autopsies. Well, guess what? Dr. Siebert didn't comply with that order when he was doing his autopsy on Adriana and many other deceased individuals. And so, on December 29, 2007, a state panel unanimously voted to take Dr. Siebert's job away from him, finding he had violated the order for supervision of his autopsies. And so, breaking that all down, first, Dr. Siebert was negligent and failed to perform the duties required of a medical examiner in at least 35 cases. Second, 2 months before his autopsy on Adriana, Dr. Siebert was fired for, quote, material misrepresentation of data upon which an opinion or conclusion as a medical examiner is based. Third, a month before his autopsy on Adriana, Dr. Siebert was reappointed to his job on an interim basis by the state's attorney heading the office that was prosecuting Amanda and desperately seeking a conviction. And fourth, Dr. Siebert was fired mere months after his work in the Amanda Lewis case because he failed to comply with a condition that his autopsies, like the one he did in Adriana, be supervised. Simply put, what this means is that Dr. Siebert's autopsy on Adriana lacks legitimacy, because Dr. Siebert was not authorized to do it himself based upon his shoddy work in dozens of other cases. And much of that misconduct consisted of Dr. Siebert failing to consider all the available evidence when reaching his conclusions, as was seen clearly in the Martin Lee Anderson case. All of this takes Dr. Siebert's conclusion in this case. As you already know, this conclusion came from his assistant, Lisa Ruckman. After lining up her left hand with the bruises on Adriana's face, she concluded that Amanda had used her left hand to fatally dunk Adriana's face in the family pool. It's the kind of conclusion you might expect from someone with no medical training or a college degree. Because, as we've noted, experts on bruising and child abuse have said that grip mark bruises from the hand would not leave linear bruises like those seen in Adriana, but instead oval or circular bruises based upon pressure being focused in the fingertips. But you might recall that we also noted the possibility that linear grip mark bruises could be left if a body part were pushed against a hard surface. And in his autopsy report, Dr. Siebert noted what he characterized as bruises in the back of Adriana's head. And so, Dr. Siebert's conclusion was that Amanda had grabbed Adriana's face with her left hand and pushed down on it so that the back of her head was hitting the bottom of the pool, producing those bruises in the back of her head. Of course, there are a million problems with this, some of which were laid out by defense counsel Walter Smith during a deposition of Dr. Siebert mere weeks before Amanda's trial. Here's some coverage of it by True Crime with Aphrodite Jones.
Given the other attacks on his credibility, was it possible Siebert had made mistakes in this case too? Walter Smith believed it was. Smith deposed him just weeks before the trial. He asked the doctor to clarify his view of two injuries identified in his report.
Our medical examiner opined that her face was held on the bottom of the pool, causing the injury to the back of the head. And then when he was informed this is not a concrete pool, this is just a rubber inflatable pool, he really didn't have any explanation for that injury.
If the bottom of the pool was too soft to have caused the injuries, Smith didn't think the facial bruises could have been made there either.
How would you have an object there to press against in order to get enough force to cause the bruising?
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible. It doesn't look like from this picture that you can actually reach the bottom of the pool. I don't know.
And there you have it. When doing his deposition mere weeks before trial, it became clear that Dr. Siebert had no idea what the crime scene looked like, what AJ claimed happened, or even the state's theory of the case. First, Dr. Siebert assumed the pool was concrete and didn't realize it had soft sides and a soft bottom. As a result, his hypothesis, or really his assistant's hypothesis, literally didn't hold water. It would only work if the pool were made of a hard material like concrete. Second, Dr. Siebert assumed this was an in-ground pool, meaning that if Amanda were on the ground, she might have been able to reach into the shallow end of the pool and push Adriana's face against the bottom of the pool. And clearly, you can hear the surprise in his voice when he was shown a picture of the pool and saw it was an above-ground pool that was 4 feet high. As a result, as Dr. Siebert acknowledged, there was no way that Amanda could have pushed Adriana's face against the bottom of the pool. Had Dr. Siebert testified at trial, he would have been torn apart, his theory shredded along with any credibility he had left. And so, knowing this, Dr. Siebert refused to testify at trial. And not only did he refuse to testify, but he fled Florida, finding refuge in New Jersey. As a result, the state had to rely on a surrogate medical examiner who had to use Dr. Siebert's meager medical documentation in this case to try to distinguish heads from tails. And it wasn't just Amanda's case that was left abandoned. An article from the Associated Press in April 2008 notes the medical examiner of a neighboring district went to Dr. Siebert's office after he fled. There, he found 35 untranscribed audio recordings of autopsies. The article noted that Dr. Siebert was asked to sign them so the families of the victims could have some finality. But, under the advice of his attorney, Dr. Siebert refused because, you guessed it, his license to practice medicine was no longer valid.
Returning to the opening of this episode, it's now clear that Dr. Siebert did a great deal of harm, but he also breached other parts of the Hippocratic Oath. According to the State Medical Examiner's Commission, he committed intentional misconduct by making, quote, material misrepresentation of data upon which an opinion or conclusion as a medical examiner is based. And as millions of people would tell you, he did a grave injustice in the case of Martin Lee Anderson, claiming that sickle cell trait took his life despite the true expert saying that this was an impossibility. And he failed to record his findings and medicinal methods in a clear and objective manner, not only for Adriana Hutto, but for the dozens of other deceased people whose autopsies he failed to complete. A man who was a titan of the medical community in the panhandle of Florida now found himself fleeing from the Sunshine State to the Garden State, too afraid to testify at the Amanda Lewis trial and lacking the credentials to complete his other autopsies. It feels like the character arc you might see in a movie. And indeed, we have a clear comparison. In 2022, Tom Field's film Tar was released to critical acclaim. In it, Kate Blanchett plays Lydia Tar, the chief conductor of the Berlin Orchestra. But after a scandal, she finds herself in the Philippines conducting a live performance of the score for the video game Monster Hunter.
Sisters and brothers of the Fifth Fleet, it's time. I'll keep my farewell brief. Never was much with words. Once you board this ship, there's no turning back. The next ground your feet touch will be that of the new world.
There are multiple meanings to this ending, but the clearest take-home for most members of the audience is that this was a huge fall from grace for a composer who used to rule the roost. And so, what about Dr. Siebert? Well, he's now a member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, who performs at kids' parties as Dr. Funnybone. According to his profile page, quote, Dr. Funnybone is available to make your child's party one they will never forget. Your child and all their friends would be amazed with the unique magic of Dr. Funnybone. They will smile and laugh at his antics as he entertains them on the special day. After a fun-filled show, the children can have a special balloon creation made just for them by Dr. Funnybone. And let's not forget the birthday star, who will receive an extra special something to say happy birthday from Dr. Funnybone. And to give you a little more flavor, here's part of a video Dr. Siebert has posted on YouTube.
Boys and girls, moms and dads, here he is, direct from someplace else to right here at your party. You'll be glad he made house calls. So let's put your hands together and give a big welcome to Dr. Funnybone.
As we've mentioned multiple times, in Dr. Siebert's absence, the state secured testimony from a surrogate medical examiner. So, what did she say? And should she have been even allowed to testify at trial? And finally, what does our own medical examiner say after having reviewed all the files? Next time on Undisclosed.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today for 10% off your first month.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer three simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at RabiaSquared2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Hey there, True Crime Podcast fans. It's Patrick and Jillian from True Crime Obsessed.
Each week on TCO, we recap a true crime documentary everyone's talking about, and we do it with heart, sass, and just the right amount of humor.
So if you like the kind of podcast where two good friends chat about a case in a thoughtful way that centers the victims, you really gotta check us out.
Yeah, we cover the well-known cases that you hear about in the news and the underreported cases that desperately need more attention.
For almost 9 years, we've been one of the most popular true crime podcasts out there.
We have over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and our brand new YouTube channel has over 50,000 subscribers watching our full-length video episodes too.
So find and subscribe True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.